George R.R. Martin. The skill and strength displayed by today's football players is often awesome to even the most jaded spectator. But what might happen if our football teams of the future were to play against aliens from a far planet where the gravity was so heavy that it produced beings who could simply run over even the strongest human players? Would teams from Earth stand any chance at all? George R.R. Martin, a young man who has become one of the top writers of science fiction in just a few years, tells of such a contest. You can expect excitement and surprises. Run to Starlight. Hill stared dourly at the latest free-fall football results from the belt as they danced across the face of his desk console, but his mind was elsewhere. For the 17th time that week, he was silently cursing the stupidity and short-sightedness of the members of the Starport City Council. The damn councilmen persisted in cutting the allocation for an artificial gravity grid out of the departmental budget every time Hill put it in. They had the nerve to tell him to stick to traditional sports in planning his recreational program for the year. The old fools had no idea of the way free-fall football was catching on throughout the system, although he'd tried to explain it to them God knows how many times. The belt sport should be an integral part of any self-respecting recreational program, and, on Earth, that meant you had to have a gravity grid. He'd planned on installing it beneath the stadium, but now... The door to his office slid open with a soft hum. Hill looked up and frowned, snapping off the console. An agitated Jack DeAngelis stepped through. "What is it now?" Hill snapped.
"Raj, there's a guy here I think you better talk to," DeAngelis replied. "He wants to enter a team in the City Football League."
"Registration closed on Tuesday," Hill said. "We've already got 12 teams, no room for any more. And why the hell can't you handle this? You're in charge of the football program."
"This is a special case," DeAngelis said.
"Then make an exception and let the team in if you want to," Hill interrupted. "Or don't let them in. It's your program. It's your decision. Must I be bothered with every bit of trivia in this whole damned department?"
"Hey, take it easy, Raj," DeAngelis protested. "I don't know what you're so steamed up about. Look, I'll show you the problem."
He turned and went to the door.
"Sir, would you step in here a minute?" he said to someone outside.
Hill started to rise from his seat, but sank slowly back into the chair when the visitor appeared in the doorway. DeAngelis was smiling.
"This is Roger Hill, the director of the Starport Department of Recreation," he said smoothly. "Raj, let me introduce Remjard Ney, the head of the Brishdiri trade mission to Earth."
Hill rose again and offered his hand numbly to the visitor. The Brishdir was squat and grotesquely broad. He was a good foot shorter than Hill, who stood 6'4", but he still gave the impression of dwarfing the director somehow. A hairless, bullet-shaped head was set squarely atop the alien's massive shoulders. His eyes were glittering green marbles sunk in the slick, leathery gray skin. There were no external ears, only small holes on either side of the skull. The mouth was a lipless slash. Diplomatically ignoring Hill's open-mouthed stare, Remjard bared his teeth in a quick smile and crushed the director's hand in his own.
"I am most pleased to meet you, sir," he said in fluent English, his voice a deep bass growl. "I have come to enter a football team in the fine league your city so graciously runs."
Hill gestured for the alien to take a seat and sat down himself. DeAngelis, still smiling at his boss's stricken look, pulled another chair up to the desk for himself. "Well, Hill began uncertainly. "This team, is it a Brishdiri team?" Remjard smiled again.
"Yes," he answered. "Your football, it is a fine game. We of the mission have many times watched it being played under 3V wall screens your people were so kind as to install. It has fascinated us. And now some of the half-men of our mission desire to try to play it."
He reached slowly into the pocket of the black and silver uniform he wore and pulled out a folded sheet of paper.
"This is a roster of our players," he said, handing it to Hill. "I believe the news facts said such a list is required to enter your league."
Hill took the paper and glanced down at it uncertainly. It was a list of some 15 Brish Deary names, neatly typed out. Everything seemed to be in order, but still...
"You'll forgive me, I hope," Hill said, "but I'm somewhat unfamiliar with the expressions of your people. You said half-men. Do you mean children?"
Ramjard nodded a quick inclination of his bullet-like head.
"Yes. Male children, the sons of mission personnel. All are aged either 8 or 9 Earth seasons."
Hill silently sighed with relief.
"I'm afraid it's out of the question, then," he said.
"Mr. DeAngelis said you were interested in the City League, but that league is for boys aged 18 and up. Occasionally we'll admit a younger boy with exceptional talent and experience, but never anyone this young." He paused briefly. "We do have several leagues for younger boys, but they've already begun play. It's much too late to add another team at this point." "Pardon, Director Hill, but I think you misunderstand," Ramjard said. "A Brish Deary male is fully mature at 14 Earth years. In our culture, such a person is regarded as a full adult. A 9-year-old Brish Deary is roughly equivalent to an 18-year-old Terran male in terms of physical and intellectual development. That is why our half-men wish to register for this league and not one of the others, you see."
"He's correct, Raj," DeAngelis said. "I've read a little about the Brish Deary, and I'm sure of it. In terms of maturity, these youngsters are eligible for the City League."
Hill threw DeAngelis a withering glance. If there was one thing he didn't need at the moment, it was a Brish Deary football team in one of his leagues, and Ramjard was arguing convincingly enough without Jack's help.
"Well, all right," Hill said. "Your team may well be of age, but there are still problems. The rec department's sports program is for local residents only. We simply don't have room to accommodate everyone who wants to participate, and your home planet is, as I understand, several hundred light years beyond the Starport city limits."
He smiled.
"True," Ramjard said. "But our trade mission has been in Starport for 6 years. An ideal location due to your city's proximity to Grissom Interstellar Spaceport, from which most of the Brish Deary traders operate while on Earth. All of the current members of the mission have been here for 2 Earth years, at least. We are Starport residents, Director Hill. I fail to understand how the location of Brishun enters into the matter at hand."
Hill squirmed uncomfortably in his seat and glared at DeAngelis, who was grinning.
"Yes, you're probably right again," he said, "but I'm still afraid we won't be able to help you. Our junior leagues are touch football, but the City League, as you might know, is tackle. It can get quite rough at times. State safety regulations require the use of special equipment to make sure no one is injured. Seriously, I'm sure you understand. And the Brish Deary..."
He groped for words, anxious not to offend.
"The physical construction of the Brish Deary is so different from the Terran that our equipment couldn't possibly fit. Chances of injury would be too great, and the department would be liable. No, I'm sure it couldn't be allowed. Too much risk." "We would provide special protective equipment," Ramjard said quietly. "We would never risk our own offspring if we did not feel it was safe."
Hill started to say something, stopped, and looked to DeAngelis for help. He had run out of good reasons why the Brish Deary couldn't enter the league. Jack smiled. "One problem remains, however," he said, coming to the director's rescue. "A bureaucratic snag, but a difficult one. Registration for the league closed on Tuesday. We've already had to turn away several teams, and if we make an exception in your case, well..." DeAngelis shrugged. "Trouble. Complaints. I'm sorry, but we must apply the same rule to all." Ramjard rose slowly from his seat and picked up the roster from where it lay on the desk.
"Of course," he said gravely. "All must follow the regulations. Perhaps next year we will be on time."
He made a formal half-bow to Hill, turned, and walked from the office. When he was sure the Brish Deer was out of earshot, Hill gave a heartfelt sigh and swiveled to face DeAngelis.
"That was close," he said. "Christ, a baldy football team. Half the people in this town lost sons in the Brish Deary War, and they still hate them. I can imagine the complaints."
Hill frowned.
"And you? Why couldn't you just get rid of him right away instead of putting me through that?"
DeAngelis grinned. "Too much fun to pass up," he said. "I wondered if you'd figure out the right way to discourage him. The Brish Deary have an almost religious respect for laws, rules, and regulations." They wouldn't think of doing anything that would force someone to break a rule. In their culture, that's just as bad as breaking a rule yourself. Hill nodded.
I would have remembered that myself if I hadn't been so paralyzed at the thought of a Brishdiri team in one of our leagues, he said limply. And now that that's over with, I want to talk to you about that gravity grid. Do you think there's any way we could rent one instead of buying it outright? The council might go for that, and I was thinking.
A little over 3 hours later, Hill was signing some equipment requisitions when the office door slid open to admit a brawny, dark-haired man in a nondescript gray suit.
Yes, the director said, a trifle impatiently. Can I help you?
The dark-haired man flashed a government ID as he took a seat.
Maybe you can, but you certainly haven't so far, I'll tell you that much. My name's Tompkins, Mac Tompkins. I'm from the Federal ET Relations Board.
Hill groaned.
I suppose it's about that Brishdiri mess this morning, he said, shaking his head in resignation.
Yes, Tompkins cut in at once.
We understand that the Brishdiri wanted to register some of their youngsters for a local football league. You forbade it on a technicality. We want to know why.
Why? Said Hill incredulously, staring at the government man. Why? For God's sakes, the Brishdiri War was only over 7 years ago. Half of those boys on our football teams had brothers killed by the bullet brains. Now you want me to tell them to play football with the subhuman monsters of 7 years back? They'd run me out of town.
Tompkins grimaced and looked around the room. Can that door be locked? He asked, pointing to the door he had come in by.
Of course, Hill replied, puzzled.
Lock it then, Tompkins said. Hill adjusted the appropriate control on his desk. What I'm going to tell you should not go beyond this room, Tompkins began.
Hill cut him off with a snort. Oh, come now, Mr. Tompkins. I may be only a small-time sports official, but I'm not stupid. You're hardly about to impart some galaxy-shattering top secret to a man you met a few seconds ago.
Tompkins smiled. True. The information's not secret, but it is a little ticklish. We would prefer that every Joe in the street doesn't know about it.
All right, I'll buy that for now. Now, what's this all about? I'm sorry if I've got no patience with subtlety, but the most difficult problem I've handled in the last year was the protest in the championship game in the Class B soccer league. Diplomacy just isn't my forte.
I'll be brief, Tompkins said. We, ET Relations, that is, we want you to admit the Brishdiri team into your football league.
You realize the furor it would cause? Hill asked.
We have some idea. In spite of that, we want them admitted.
Why, may I ask?
Because of the furor, if they aren't admitted. Tompkins paused to stare at Hill for a second, then apparently reached a decision of some sort and continued. The Earth-Brishan War was a ghastly, bloody deadlock. Although our propaganda men insist on pretending it was a great victory, no sane man on either side wants it resumed. But not everyone is sane. The agent frowned in distaste. There are elements among us who regard the Brishdiri, or the Bullet Brains, or Baldies, or whatever you want to call them, as monsters, even now, 7 years after the killing has ended.
And you think a Brishdiri football team would help to overcome the leftover hates?
Hill interrupted. Partially. But that's not the important part. You see, there is also an element among the Brishdiri that regards humans as subhuman, vermin to be wiped from the galaxy. They are a very virile, competitive race. Their whole culture stresses combat. The dissident element I mentioned will seize on your refusal to admit a Brishdiri team as a sign of fear, an admission of human inferiority. They'll use it to agitate for a resumption of the war. We don't want to risk giving them a propaganda victory like that. Relations are too strained as it is.
But the Brishdiri I spoke to, Hill objected. I explained it all to him. A rule, surely their respect for law.
Remjard Ney is a leader of the Brishdiri peace faction. He, personally, will defend your position, but he and his son were disappointed by the refusal. They will talk. They already have been talking. And that means that eventually the war faction will get hold of the story and turn it against us.
I see. But what can I do at this point? I've already told Remjard that registration closed Tuesday. If I understand correctly, his own morality would never permit him to take advantage of an exception now.
Tompkins nodded. True. You can't make an exception. Just change the rule. Let in all the teams you refused. Expand the league.
Hill shook his head, wincing. But our budget, it couldn't take it. We'd have more games. We'd need more time, more referees, more equipment.
Tompkins dismissed the problem with a wave of his hand. The government is already buying the Brishdiri special football uniforms.
We'd be happy to cover all your extra costs. You'd get a better recreational program for all concerned. Hill still looked doubtful. Well... Moreover, Tompkins said, we might be able to arrange a government grant or two to bolster other improvements in your program. Now, how about it? Hill's eyes sparkled with sudden interest. A grant? How big a grant? Could you swing a gravity grid? No problem, said Tompkins. A slow grin spread across his face. Hill returned the grin. Then, mister? Starport's got itself a Brish-Deary football team, but oh, are they going to scream. He flicked on the desk intercom. Get Jack DeAngelis in here, he ordered. I've got a little surprise for him. The sky above Starport Municipal Stadium was bleak and dreary on a windy Saturday morning a week later, but Hill didn't mind it at all. The stadium force bubble kept out the thin, wet drizzle that had soaked him to the bones on the way to the game, and the weather fitted his mood beautifully. Normally, Hill was far too busy to attend any of his department's sporting events. Normally, everyone was too busy to attend the department's sporting events. The rec department leagues got fairly good coverage in the local newspaper, but they seldom drew many spectators. The record was something like 400 people for a championship game a few years ago. Or rather, that was the record, Hill reminded himself. No more. The stadium was packed today, in spite of the hour, the rain, and everything else. Municipal Stadium was never packed except for the traditional Thanksgiving Day football game between Starport High and its arch-rival, Grissom City Prep. But today, it was packed. Hill knew why. It had been drilled into him the hard way after he had made the damn fool decision to let the Brish-Deary into the league. The whole city was up in arms. Six local teams had withdrawn from the city league rather than play with the inhuman monsters. The office switchboard had been flooded with calls daily, the vast majority of them angry denunciations of Hill. A city council member had called for his resignation. And that, Hill reflected glumly, was probably what it would come to in the end. The local newspaper, which had always been hard-line conservative on foreign affairs, was backing the drive to force Hill out of office. One of its editorials had reminded him gleefully that Starport Municipal Stadium was dedicated to those who had given their lives in the Brish-Deary War and had screamed about desecration. Meanwhile, on its sports pages, the paper had taken to calling the Brish-Deary team the Baldy Eagles. Hill squirmed uncomfortably in his seat on the 50-yard line and prayed silently that the game would begin. He could feel the angry stares on the back of his neck, and he had the uneasy impression that he was going to be hit with a rock any second now. Across the field, he could see the camera installation of one of the big 3V networks. All five of them were here, of course. The game had gotten planet-wide publicity. The NewsFax wires had also sent reporters, although they had seemed a little confused about what kind of a story this was. One had sent a political reporter, the other a sports writer. Out on the stadium's artificial grass, the human team was running through a few plays and warming up. Their bright red uniforms were emblazoned with Ken's Computer Repair in white lettering, and they wore matching white helmets. They looked pretty good, Hill decided from watching them practice, although they were far from championship caliber. Still, against a team that had never played football before, they should mop up. DeAngelis, wearing a pained expression and a ref's striped shirt, was out on the field talking to his officials. Hill was taking no chances with bad calls in this game. He'd made sure the department's best men were on hand to officiate. Tompkins was also there, sitting in the stands a few sections away from Hill. But the Brish-Deary were not. Remjard wanted to attend, but E.T. Relations, on Hill's advice, had told him to stay at the mission. Instead, the game was being piped to him over closed-circuit 3V. Hill suddenly straightened in his seat. The Brish-Deary team, which called itself the Kozg Anjen, after a flying carnivore native to Brishun, had arrived, and the players were walking slowly out onto the field. There was a brief instant of silence, and then someone in the crowd started booing. Others picked it up, then others. The stadium was filled with the boos. Although, Hill noted with relief, not everyone was joining in. Maybe there were some people who saw things his way. The Brish-Deary ignored the catcalls, or seemed to, at any rate. Hill had never seen an angry Brish-Deer, and was unsure how one would go about showing his anger. The Kozg Anjen wore tight-fitting black uniforms with odd-looking elongated silver helmets to cover their bullet-shaped heads. They looked like no football team Hill had ever seen. Only a handful of them stood over 5 feet, but they were all as squat and broad as a tackle for the Packers. Their arms and legs were thick and stumpy, but rippled with muscles that bulged in the wrong places. The helmeted heads, however, gave an impression of frailty, like eggshells ready to shatter at the slightest impact. Two of the Brishdiri detached themselves from the group and walked over to DeAngelis. Evidently, they felt they didn't need a warm-up and wanted to start immediately. DeAngelis talked to them for an instant, then turned and beckoned to the captain of the human team.
How do you think it'll go?
Hill turned. It was Tompkins. The ET agent had struggled through the crowd to his side.
Hard to say, the director replied. The Brishdiri have never really played football before, so the odds are they'll lose. Being from a heavy gravity planet, they'll be stronger than the humans, so that might give them an edge. But they're also a lot slower from what I hear.
I'll have to route them home, Tompkins said with a smile. Bolster the cause of interstellar relations and all that. Hill scowled.
You root them home if you like. I'm pulling for the humans. Thanks to you, I'm in enough trouble already. If they catch me rooting for the Brishdiri, they'll tear me to shreds.
He turned his attention back to the field. The computer men had won the toss and elected to receive. One of the taller Brishdiri was going back to kick off.
Tugai Dei, Tompkins provided helpfully, the son of the mission's chief linguist.
Hill nodded. Tugai Dei ran forward with a ponderous, lumbering gallop, nearly stopped when he finally reached the football and slammed his foot into it awkwardly but hard. The ball landed in the upper tier of the stands, and a murmur went through the crowd.
Pretty good, Tompkins said, don't you think?
Too good, replied Hill. He did not elaborate.
The humans took the ball on their 20. The computer men went into a huddle, broke it with a loud clap, and ran to their positions. A ragged cheer went up from the stands. The humans went down into the three-point stance. Their Brishdiri opponents did not. The alien linemen just stood there, hands dangling at their sides, crouching a little.
They don't know much about football, Hill said, but after that kickoff, I wonder if they have to.
The ball was snapped, and the quarterback for Ken's computer repair, a rangy ex-high school star named Sullivan, faded back to pass. The Brishdiri rushed forward in a crude blitz and crashed into the human lineman. An instant later, Sullivan was lying face down in the grass, buried under three Brishdiri. The aliens had blown through the offensive line as if it didn't exist. That made it 2nd and 15. The humans huddled again, came out to another cheer, not quite so loud as the first one. The ball was snapped. Sullivan handed off to a beefy fullback who crashed straight ahead. One of the Brishdiri brought him down before he went half a yard. It was a clumsy tackle around the shoulders, but the force of the contact knocked the fullback several yards in the wrong direction. When the humans broke from their huddle for the third time, the cheer could scarcely be heard. Again Sullivan tried to pass. Again the Brishdiri blasted through the line en masse. Again Sullivan went down for a loss. Hill groaned.
"This looks worse every minute," he said.
Tompkins didn't agree. "I don't think so. They're doing fine. What difference does it make who wins?" Hill didn't bother to answer that. There was no cheering when the humans came out in punt formation. Once more, the Brishdiri put on a strong rush, but the punter got the ball away before they reached him. It was a good, deep kick. The Kazganjen took over on their own 25-yard line. Mardane Ney, Remjard's son, was the Brishdiri quarterback. On the first play from scrimmage, he handed off to a halfback, a runt built like a tank. The Brishdiri blockers flattened their human opponents almost effortlessly, and the runt plowed through the gaping hole, ran over two would-be tacklers, and burst into the clear. He was horribly slow, however, and the defenders finally brought him down from behind after a modest 30-yard gain, but it took three people to stop him. On the next play, Mardane tried to pass. He got excellent protection, but his receivers, trudging along at top speed, had defensemen all over them, and the ball, when thrown, went sizzling over the heads of Brishdiri and humans alike. Mardane returned to the ground again after that and handed off to a runt halfback once more. This time he tried to sweep around end but was hauled to the ground after a gain of only 5 yards by a quartet of human tacklers. That made it 3rd and 5. Mardane kept to the ground. He gave the ball to his other halfback and the brawny Brishdir smashed up the middle. He was a little bit faster than the runt. When he got in the clear, only one man managed to catch him from behind, and one wasn't enough. The alien shrugged off the tackle and lumbered on across the goal line.
The extra point try went under the crossbar instead of over it, but it still nearly killed the poor guy in the stands who tried to catch the ball. Tompkins was grinning. Hill shook his head in disgust.
"This isn't the way it's supposed to go," he said. "They'll kill us if the Brish Deary win."
The kickoff went out of the stadium entirely this time. On the first play from the 20, a Brish Deary lineman roared through the line and hit Sullivan just as he was handing off. Sullivan fumbled. Another Brish Deer picked up the loose ball and carried it into the end zone while most of the humans were still lying on the ground.
"My God," said Hill, feeling a bit numb. "They're too strong. They're too damn strong. The humans can't cope with their strength, can't stop them."
"Cheer up," said Tompkins. "It can't get much worse for your side." But it did. It got a lot worse. On offense, the Brish Deary were well nigh unstoppable. Their runners were all short on speed, but made up for it with muscle. On play after play, they smashed straight up the middle behind a wall of blockers, flicking tacklers aside like bothersome insects. And then Mardane began to hit on his passes. Short passes, of course. The Brish Deary lacked the speed to cover much ground, but they could outjump any human, and they snared pass after pass in the air. There was no need to worry about interceptions. The humans simply couldn't hang on to Mardane's smoking pitches. On defense, things were every bit as bad. The computer men couldn't run against the Brish Deary line, and Sullivan seldom had time to complete a pass, for the alien rushers were unstoppable. The few passes he did hit on went for touchdowns. No Brish Deary could catch a human from behind, but those were few and far between. When Hill fled the stadium in despair at the half, the score was Kozg Angen 37, Ken's Computer Repair 7. The final score was 57-14. The Brish Deary had emptied their bench in the second half. Hill didn't have the courage to attend the next Brish Deary game later in the week, but nearly everyone else in the city showed up to see if the Kozg Angen could do it again. They did. In fact, they did even better. They beat Anderson's Drugs by a lopsided 61-9 score. After the Brish Deary won their third contest, 43-17, the huge crowds began tapering off. The Starport Municipal Stadium was only three-quarters full when the Kozg Angen rolled over the Stardusters 38-0, and a mere handful showed up on a rainy Thursday afternoon to see the aliens punish the United Veterans Association 51-6, and no one came after that. For Hill, the Brish Deary win over the UVA-sponsored team was the final straw. The local paper made a heyday out of that, going on and on about the ironic injustice of having the UVA slaughtered by the Brish Deary in a stadium dedicated to the dead veterans of the Brish Deary War. And Hill, of course, was the main villain in the piece. The phone calls had finally let up by that point, but the mail had been flowing into his office steadily, and most of it was not very comforting. The harassed rec director got a few letters of commendation and support, but the bulk of the flood speculated crudely about his ancestry or threatened his life and property. Two more city councilmen had come out publicly in favor of Hill's dismissal after the Brish Deary defeated UVA. Several others on the council were wavering, while Hill's supporters, who backed him strongly in private, were afraid to say anything for the record. The municipal elections were simply too close, and none were willing to risk their political skins. And of course, the assistant director of recreation, next in line for Hill's job, had wasted no time in saying he would certainly never have done such an unpatriotic thing. With disaster piling upon disaster, it was only natural that Hill reacted with something less than enthusiasm when he walked into his office a few days after the fifth Kozg Angen victory and found Tompkins sitting at his desk waiting for him.
"And what in the hell do you want now?"
Hill roared at the ET relations man. Tompkins looked slightly abashed and got up from the director's chair. He had been watching the latest free-fall football results on the desk console while waiting for Hill to arrive. "I've got to talk to you," Tompkins said. "We've got a problem."
"We've got lots of problems," Hill replied.
He strode angrily to his desk, sat down, flicked off the console, and pulled a sheaf of papers from a drawer.
"This is the latest of them," he continued, waving the papers at Tompkins. "One of the kids broke his leg in the Starduster game. It happens all the time. Football's a rough game. You can't do anything to prevent it. In a normal case, a department would send a letter of apology to the parents, our insurance would pay for it, and everything would be forgotten. But not in this case. Oh, no. This injury was inflicted while the kid was playing against the Brish Deary, so his parents are charging negligence on our part and suing the city. So our insurance company refuses to pay up. It claims the policy doesn't cover damage by inhuman, super-strong alien monsters. Bah! How's that for a problem, Mr. Tompkins? Plenty more where that came from."
Tompkins frowned. Very unfortunate, but my problem is a lot more serious than that. Hill started to interrupt, but the E.T. relations man waved him down. No, please, hear me out. This is very important. He looked around for a seat, grabbed the nearest chair, and pulled it up to the desk. Our plans have backfired badly, he began. There has been a serious miscalculation, our fault entirely, I'm afraid. E.T. relations failed to consider all the ramifications of this Brish-Deary football team. Hill fixed him with an iron stare. What's wrong now? Well, Tompkins said awkwardly, we knew that refusal to admit the Khazg Anjen into your league would be a sign of human weakness and fear to the Brish-Deary war faction. But once you admitted them, we thought the problem was solved. It wasn't. We went wrong when we assumed that winning or losing would make no difference to the Brish-Deary. To us, it was just a game. Didn't matter who won. After all, Brish-Deary and Terrans would be getting to know each other, competing harmlessly on even terms. Nothing but good could come from it, we felt. So, Hill interrupted, get to the point. Tompkins shook his head sadly. The point is, we didn't know the Brish-Deary would win so big and so regularly. He paused. We got a transmission late last night from one of our men on Brishun. It seems the Brish-Deary war faction is using the one-sided football scores as propaganda to prove the racial inferiority of humans. They seem to be getting a lot of mileage out of it. Hill winced. So it was all for nothing. So I've subjected myself to all this abuse and endangered my career for absolutely nothing. Great. That was all I needed, I tell you. We still might be able to salvage something, Tompkins said. That's why I came to see you. If you can arrange it for the Brish-Deary to lose, it would knock holes in that superiority yarn and make the war faction look like fools. It would discredit them for quite a while. And just how am I supposed to arrange for them to lose, as you so nicely put it? What do you think I'm running here anyway, professional wrestling? Tompkins just shrugged lamely. I was hoping you'd have some ideas, he said. Hill leaned forward and flicked on his intercom. Is Jack out there? He asked. Good, send him in. The lanky sports official appeared less than a minute later. You're on top of this city football mess, Hill said. What's the chances the Khazg Anjen will lose? DeAngelis looked puzzled. Not all that good offhand, he replied. They've got a damn fine team. He reached into his back pocket and pulled out a notebook. Let me check their schedule. He continued thumbing through the pages. He stopped when he found the place. Well, the league's got a round-robin schedule. As you know, every team plays every other team once. Best record is champion. Now, the Brish-Deary are currently 5-0, and they've beaten a few of the better teams. We've got 10 teams left in the league, so they've got 4 games left to play. Only 2 of those are with the weakest teams in the league, and the third opponent is only mediocre. And the fourth? Hill said hopefully. That's your only chance. An outfit sponsored by a local tavern, the Blast Off Inn. Good team, fast, strong, plenty of talent. They're also 5-0 and should give the Brish-Deary some trouble. DeAngelis frowned. But to be frank, I've seen both teams and I'd still pick the Brish-Deary. That ground game of theirs is just too much. He snapped the notebook shut and pocketed it again. Would a close game be good enough? Hill said, turning to Tompkins again. The E.T. relations man shook his head. No, they have to be beaten. If they lose, the whole season's meaningless. Proves nothing but that the two races can compete on roughly equal terms, but if they win, it looks like they're invincible, and our stature in Brish-Deary eyes takes a nosedive. Then they'll have to lose, I guess, Hill said. His gaze shifted back to DeAngelis. Jack, you and me are going to have to do some hard thinking about how the Khazg Anjen can be beaten, and then we're going to call up the manager of the Blastoff Inn team and give him a few tips. You have any ideas? DeAngelis scratched his head thoughtfully. Well, he began, maybe we... During the weeks that followed, DeAngelis met with the Blastoff Inn coach regularly to discuss plans and strategy and supervised a few practice sessions. Hill, meanwhile, was fighting desperately to keep his job and jotting down ideas on how to beat the Brish-Deary during every spare moment. Untouched by the furor, the Khazg Anjen won its 6th game handily, 40-7, and then rolled to devastating victories over the circuit's 2 cellar dwellers. The margins were 73-0 and 62-7. That gave them an unblemished 8-0 ledger with 1 game left to play. But the Blastoff Inn team was also winning regularly, although never as decisively. It too would enter the last game of the season undefeated. The local paper heralded the showdown with a sports page streamer on the day before the game. The lead opened, "The stakes will be high for the entire human race tomorrow at Municipal Stadium when Blastoff Inn meets the Brishdiri Baldy Eagles for the championship of the Department of Recreation City Football League." The reporter who wrote the story never dreamed how close to the truth he actually was. The crowds returned to the stadium for the championship game, although they fell far short of a packed house. The local paper was there too, but the 3V networks and the Newsfax wires were long gone. The novelty of the story had worn off quickly. Hill arrived late, just before game time, and joined Tompkins on the 50-yard line. The ET agent seemed to have cheered up somewhat. "Our guys looked pretty good during the warm-up," he told the director. "I think we've got a chance." His enthusiasm was not catching, however.
"Blastoff Inn might have a chance, but I sure don't," Hill said glumly. "The city council is meeting tonight to consider a motion for calling for my dismissal. I have a strong suspicion that it's going to pass no matter who wins this afternoon."
"Hmm," said Tompkins, for want of anything better to say. "Just ignore the old fools. Look, the game's starting." Hill muttered something under his breath and turned his attention back to the field. The Brishdiri had lost the toss once more, and the kickoff had once again soared out of the stadium. It was 1st and 10 for Blastoff Inn on its own 20. And, at that point, the script suddenly changed. The humans lined up for their first play of the game, but with a difference. Instead of playing immediately in back of the center, the Blastoff quarterback was several yards deep in a shotgun formation. The idea, Hill recalled, was to take maximum advantage of human speed and mount a strong passing offense. Running against the Brishdiri was all but impossible, he and DeAngelis had concluded after careful consideration. That meant an aerial attack, and the only way to provide that was to give the Blastoff quarterback time to pass. Ergo, the shotgun formation. The hike from center was dead on target, and the Blastoff receivers shot off downfield, easily outpacing the ponderous Brishdiri defensemen. As usual, the Kozg Anjen crashed through the line en masse, but they had covered only half the distance to the quarterback before he got off the pass. It was a long bomb, a psychological gambit to shake up the Brishdiri by scoring on the first play of the game. Unfortunately, the pass was slightly overthrown. Hill swore. It was now 2nd and 10. Again, the humans lined up in a shotgun offense, and again the Blastoff quarterback got off the pass in time. It was a short, quick pitch to the sideline, complete for a 9-yard gain. The crowd cheered lustily. Hill wasn't sure what the Brishdiri would expect on 3rd and 1, but whatever it was, they didn't get it. With the alien still slightly off balance, Blastoff went for the bomb again. This time it was complete. All alone in the open, the fleet human receiver snagged the pass neatly and went all the way in for the score. The Brishdiri never laid a hand on him. The crowd sat in stunned silence for a moment when the pass was caught. Then, when it became clear that there was no way to prevent the score, the cheering began and peaked slowly to an ear-splitting roar. The stadium rose to its feet as one, screaming wildly. For the first time all season, the Kozg Anjen trailed. A picture-perfect place kick made the score 7-0 in favor of Blastoff Inn. Tompkins was on his feet, cheering loudly. Hill, who had remained seated, regarded him dourly. "Sit down," he said. "The game's not over yet." The Brishdiri soon underlined that point. No sooner did they take over the ball than they came pounding back upfield, smashing into the line again and again. The humans alternated between a dozen different defensive formations. None of them seemed to do any good. The Brishdiri steamroller ground ahead inexorably. The touchdown was an anticlimax. Luckily, however, the extra point try failed. Tugai Day lost a lot of footballs, but he had still not developed a knack for putting his kicks between the crossbars. The Blastoff offense took the field again. They looked determined. The first play from scrimmage was a short pass over the middle, complete for 15 yards. Next came a tricky double pass, complete for 12 yards. On the following play, the Blastoff fullback tried to go up the middle. He got creamed for a 5-yard loss. "If they stop our passing, we're dead," Hill said to Tompkins without taking his eyes off the field. Luckily, the Blastoff quarterback quickly gave up on the idea of establishing a running game. A prompt return to the air gave the humans another first down. 3 plays later, they scored. Again, the crowd roared. Trailing now 14-6, the Brishdiri once more began to pound their way upfield. but the humans, elated by their lead, were a little tougher now. Reading the Brish Deary offense with confident precision, the defensemen began gang-tackling the alien runners. The Kazg Anjen drive slowed down, then stalled. They were forced to surrender the ball near the 50-yard line. Tompkins started pounding Hill on the back. "You did it," he said. "We stopped them on offense, too. We're going to win."
"Take it easy," Hill replied. "That was a fluke. Several of our men just happened to be in the right place at the right time. It's happened before. No one ever said the Brish Deary scored every time they got the ball, only most of the time."
Back on the field, the blast-off passing attack was still humming smoothly. A few accurate throws put the humans on the Kazg Anjen's 30. And then the aliens changed formations. They took several men off the rush and put them on pass defense. They started double-teaming the blast-off receivers, except it wasn't normal double-teaming. The second defender was playing far back of the line of scrimmage. By the time the human had outrun the first Brish Deer, the second would be right on top of him.
"I was afraid of something like this," Hill said. "We're not the only ones who can react to circumstances."
The blast-off quarterback ignored the shift in the alien defense and stuck to his aerial game plan. But his first pass from the 30, dead on target, was batted away by a Brish Deer defender who happened to be right on top of the play. The same thing happened on second down. That made it 3rd and 10. The humans called timeout. There was a hurried conference on the sidelines. When action resumed, the blast-off offense abandoned the shotgun formation. Without the awesome Brish Deary blitz to worry about, the quarterback was relatively safe in his usual position. There was a quick snap, and the quarterback got rid of the ball equally quickly, an instant before a charging Brish Deer bore him to the ground. The halfback who got the handoff streaked to the left in an end run. The other Brish Deary defenders lumbered towards him en masse to seal shut the sideline, but just as he reached the sideline, still behind the line of scrimmage, the blast-off halfback handed off to a teammate streaking right. A wide grin spread across Hill's face. A reverse! The Brish Deary were painfully slow to change directions. The humans swept around right end with ridiculous ease and shot upfield surrounded by blockers. The remaining Brish Deary closed in. One or two were taken out by team blocks. The rest found it impossible to lay their hands on the swift, darting runner. Dodging this way and that, he wove a path neatly between them and loped into the end zone. Once more, the stadium rose to its feet. This time, Hill stood up, too. Tompkins was beaming again. "Ha!" he said. "I thought you were the one who said we couldn't run against them."
"Normally we can't," the director replied. "There's no way to run over or through them, so runs up the middle are out. End runs are better, but if they're in their formal formation, that too is a dreary prospect. There is no way a human runner can get past a wall of charging Brish Deary. However, when they spread out like they just did, they give us an open field to work with. We can't go over or through them, no, but we sure as hell can go between them when they're scattered all over the field and Blastoff Inn has several excellent open field runners."
The crowd interrupted him with another roar to herald a successful extra-point conversion. It was now 21-6. The game was far from over, however. The human defense was not nearly as successful on the next series of downs. Instead of relying exclusively on the running game, Mardane kept his opponents guessing with some of his patented short, hard pop passes. To put on a more effective rush, the blast-off defense spread out at wide intervals. The offense line thus opened up, and several humans managed to fake out slower Brish Deary blockers and get past them to the quarterback. Mardane was even thrown for a loss once. But the blast-off success was short-lived. Mardane adjusted quickly. The widely spread human defense, highly effective against the pass, was a total failure against the run. The humans were too far apart to gang tackle, and there was no way short of mass assault to stop a Brish Deer in full stride. After that, there was no stopping the Kazg Anjen, as Mardane alternated between the pass and the run according to the human defensive formation. The aliens marched upfield quickly for their second touchdown. This time, even the extra point was on target. The Brish Deary score had taken some of the steam out of the crowd, but the blast-off in offense showed no signs of being disheartened when they took the field again. With the aliens back in their original blitz defense, the human quarterback fell back on the shotgun once more. His first pass was overthrown, but the next three in a row were dead on target and moved Blastoff to the Kazg Anjen 40. A running play, inserted to break the monotony, ended in a 6-yard loss. Then came another incomplete pass. The toss was perfect, but the receiver dropped the ball. That made it 3rd and 10, and a tremor of apprehension went through the crowd. Nearly everyone in the stadium realized that the humans had to keep scoring to stay in the game. The snap from center was quick and clean. The blast-off quarterback snagged the ball, took a few unhurried steps backward to keep at a safe distance from the oncoming Brish Deary rushers, and tried to pick out a receiver. He scanned the field carefully, then he reared back and unleashed a bomb. It looked like another touchdown. The human had his alien defender beaten by a good 5 yards and was still gaining ground. The pass was a beauty, but then, as the ball began to spiral downward, the Brishdiri defender stopped suddenly in mid-stride. Giving up his hopeless chase, he craned his head around to look for the ball, spotted it, braced himself, and jumped. Brishdiri leg muscles, evolved for the heavy gravity of Brishun, were far more powerful than their human counterparts. Despite their heavier bodies, the Brishdiri could easily outjump any human. But so far they had only taken advantage of that fact to snare Mardane's pop passes. But now, as Hill blinked in disbelief, the Khazg Anjen defense man leaped at least 5 feet into the air to meet the descending ball in midair and knock it aside with a vicious backhand slap. The stadium moaned. Forced into a punting situation, Blastoff In suddenly seemed to go limp. The punter fumbled the snap from center and kicked the ball away when he tried to pick it up. The Brishdir who picked it up got 20 yards before he was brought down. The human defense this time put up only token resistance as Mardane led his team downfield on a series of short passes and devastating runs. It took the Brishdiri exactly 6 plays to narrow the gap to 21-19. Luckily, Tugay missed another extra point. There was a loud cheer when the blastoff offense took the field again, but right from the first play after the kickoff, it was obvious that something had gone out of them. The human quarterback, who had been giving a brilliant performance, suddenly became erratic. To add to his problems, the Brishdiri were suddenly jumping all over the field. The alien kangaroo pass defense had several severe limitations. It demanded precise timing and excellent reflexes on the part of the jumpers, neither of which was a Brishdiri fort. But it was a disconcerting tactic that the blastoff quarterback had never come up against before. He didn't know quite how to cope with it. The humans drove to their own 40, bogged down, and were forced to punt. The Khazg Anjen promptly marched the ball back the other way and scored. For the first time in the game, they led. The next blastoff drive was a bit more successful and reached the Brishdiri 20 before it ground to a halt. The humans salvaged the situation with a field goal. The Khazg Anjen rolled up another score, driving over the goal line just seconds before the half ended. The score stood at 31-24 in favor of the Brishdiri. And there was no secret about the way the tide was running. It had grown very quiet in the stands. Tompkins, wearing a worried expression, turned to Hill with a sigh.
"Well, maybe we'll make a comeback in the second half. We're only down 7. That's not so bad."
"Maybe," Hill said doubtfully, "but I don't think so. They've got all the momentum. I hate to say so, but I think we're going to get run out of the stadium in the second half."
Tompkins frowned.
"I certainly hope not. I'd hate to see what the Brishdiri war faction would do with a really lopsided score. Why, they'd..."
He stopped, suddenly aware that Hill wasn't paying the slightest bit of attention. The director's eyes had wandered back to the field.
"Look," Hill said, pointing, "by the gate. Do you see what I see?"
"It looks like a car from the trade mission," the ET agent said, squinting to make it out.
"And who's that getting out?"
Tompkins hesitated.
"Remjard Ney," he said at last.
The Brishdir climbed smoothly from the low-slung black vehicle, walked a short distance across the stadium grass, and vanished through the door leading to one of the dressing rooms.
"What's he doing here?" Hill asked. "Wasn't he supposed to stay away from the games?"
Tompkins scratched his head uneasily. "Well, that's what we advised, especially at first when hostility was at its highest. But he's not a prisoner, you know. There's no way we could force him to stay away from the games if he wants to attend." Hill was frowning.
"Why should he take your advice all season and suddenly disregard it now?"
Tompkins shrugged.
"Maybe he wanted to see his son win a championship."
"Maybe, but I don't think so. There's something funny going on here."
By the time the second half was ready to begin, Hill was feeling even more apprehensive. The Khazg Anjen had taken the field a few minutes earlier, but Remjard had not reappeared. He was still down in the alien locker room. Moreover, there was something subtly different about the Brishdiri as they lined up to receive the kickoff. Nothing drastic, nothing obvious, but somehow the atmosphere was changed. The aliens appeared more carefree, more relaxed, almost as if they had stopped taking their opponents seriously. Hill could sense the difference. He'd seen other teams with the same sort of attitude before in dozens of other contests.
It was the attitude of a team that already knows how the game is going to come out, the attitude of a team that knows it is sure to win or doomed to lose. The kickoff was poor and wobbly. A squat Brish Deer took it near the 30 and headed upfield. Two blast-off tacklers met him at the 35. He fumbled. The crowd roared. For a second, the ball rolled loose on the stadium grass. A dozen hands reached for it, knocking it this way and that. Finally, a brawny blast-off lineman landed squarely on top of it and trapped it beneath him. And suddenly, the game turned around again. "I don't believe it," Hill said. "That was it. The break we needed. After that touchdown pass was knocked aside, our team just lost heart. But now, after this, look at them. We're back in this game." The blast-off offense raced onto the field, broke the huddle with an enthusiastic shout, and lined up. It was first and 10 from the Brish Deary 28. The first pass was deflected off a bounding Brish Deer. The second, however, went for a touchdown. The score was tied. The Kozg Anjen held on to the kickoff this time. They put the ball in play near the 25. Mardane opened the series of downs with a pass. No one, human or Brish Deer, was within 10 yards of where it came down. The next play was a run, but the Kozg Anjen halfback hesitated oddly after he took the handoff. Given time to react, four humans smashed into him at the line of scrimmage. Mardane went back to the air. The pass was incomplete again. The Brish Deary were forced to punt. Up in the stands, Tompkins was laughing wildly. He began slapping Hill on the back again. "Look at that. Not even a first down. We held them, and you said they were going to run us out of the stadium." A strange half-smile danced across the director's face. He said. "So I did." The smile faded. It was a good, solid punt, but Blastoff's deep man fielded it superbly and ran it back to the 50. From there, it took only 7 plays for the human quarterback, suddenly looking cool and confident again, to put the ball in the end zone. Bouncing Brish Deary had evidently ceased to disturb him. He simply threw the ball through spots where they did not happen to be bouncing. This time, the humans missed the extra point, but no one cared. The score was 37-31. Blastoff in was ahead again. And they were ahead to stay. No sooner had the Kozg Anjen taken over again than Mardane threw an interception. It was the first interception he had thrown all season. Naturally, it was run back for a touchdown. After that, the Brish Deary seemed to revive a little. They drove 3/4 of the way down the field, but then they bogged down as soon as they got within the shadow of the goalposts. On 4th and 1 from the 12-yard line, the top Brish Deary runner slipped and fell behind the line of scrimmage. Blastoff took over and scored. From then on, it was more of the same. The final score was 56-31. The wrong team had been run out of the stadium. Tompkins, of course, was in ecstasy. "We did it. I knew we could do it. This is perfect, just perfect. We humiliated them. The war faction will be totally discredited now. They'll never be able to stand up under the ridicule." He grinned and slapped Hill soundly on the back once again. Hill winced under the blow and eyed the ET man dourly. "There's something funny going on here. If the Brish Deary had played all season the way they played in the second half, they never would have gotten this far. Something happened in that locker room during halftime." Nothing could dent Tompkins' grin, however. "No, no," he said. "It was the fumble. That was what did it. It demoralized them and they fell apart. They just clutched, that's all. It happens all the time." "Not to teams this good, it doesn't," Hill replied. But Tompkins wasn't around to hear. The ET agent had turned abruptly and was weaving his way through the crowd, shouting something about being right back. Hill frowned and turned back to the field. The stadium was emptying quickly. The rec director stood there for a second, still looking puzzled. Then suddenly, he vaulted the low fence around the field and set off across the grass. He walked briskly across the stadium and down into the visitors' locker room. The Brish Deary were changing clothes in sullen silence and filing out of the room slowly to the airbus that would carry them back to the trade mission. Remjard Ney was sitting in a corner of the room. The Brish Deer greeted him with a slight nod.
"Director Hill, did you enjoy the game? It was a pity our half-men failed in their final test, but they still performed creditably, do you not think?"
Hill ignored the question. "Don't give me the bit about failing, Remjard. I'm not as stupid as I look. Maybe no one else in the stadium realized what was going on out there this afternoon, but I did. You didn't lose that game. You threw it. Deliberately. And I want to know why." Remjard stared at Hill for a long minute. Then, very slowly, he rose from the bench on which he was seated. His face was blank and expressionless, but his eyes glittered in the dim light. Hill suddenly realized that they were alone in the locker room. Then he remembered the awesome Brish Deary strength and took a hasty step backwards away from the alien.
"You realize," Remjard said gravely, that it is a grave insult to accuse a Brish deer of dishonorable conduct.
The emissary took another careful look around the locker room to make sure the two of them were alone. Then he took another step towards Hill, and broke into a wide smile when the director, edging backwards, almost tripped over a locker.
"But of course there is no question of dishonor here," the alien continued. "Honor is too big for a half-man's play. And to be sure, in the rules that you furnished us, there was no provisions requiring participants to..." He paused. "To play at their best, shall we say."
Hill, untangling himself from the locker, sputtered, "But there are unwritten rules, traditions. This sort of thing simply is not sporting." Remchard was still smiling.
"To a Brish deer there is nothing as meaningless as an unwritten rule. It is a contradiction in terms, as you say."
"But why?" said Hill. "That's what I can't understand. Everyone keeps telling me that your culture is virile, competitive, proud. Why should you throw the game? Why should you make yourself look bad? Why?"
Remchard made an odd gurgling noise. Had he been a human, Hill would have thought he was choking. Instead, he assumed he was laughing.
"Humans amuse me," the Brish deer said at last. "You attach a few catchphrases to a culture and you think you understand it. And if something disagrees with your picture, you are shocked. I am sorry, Director Hill. Cultures are not that simple. They are very complex mechanisms. A word like pride does not describe everything about the Brish deary. Oh, we are proud, yes, and competitive, yes. But we are also intelligent, and our values are flexible enough to adjust to the situation at hand."
Remchard paused again and looked Hill over carefully, then he decided to continue.
"This football of yours is a fine game, Director Hill. I told you that once before, I mean it. It is very enjoyable, a good exercise of mind and body. But it is only a game. Competing in games is important, of course, but there are larger competitions, more important ones. And I am intelligent enough to know which one gets our first priority. I received word from Brishun this afternoon about the use to which the Kazg Anjen victories were being put. Your friend from extraterrestrial relations must have told you that I rank among the leaders of the Brish deary Peace Party. I would not be here on Earth otherwise. None of our opponents is willing to work with humans whom they consider animals. Naturally, I came at once to the stadium and informed our half-men that they must lose. And they, of course, complied. They too realize that some competitions are more important than others. For in losing, we have won. Our opponents on Brishun will not survive this humiliation. In the next great choosing, many will turn against them, and I, and others at the mission, will profit, and the Brish deary will profit." "Yes, Director Hill," Remchard concluded, still smiling. "We are a competitive race, but competition for control of a world takes precedence over a football game."
Hill was smiling himself by now, then he began to laugh.
"Of course," he said. "And when I think of the ways we pounded our heads out to think of strategies to beat you, when all we had to do was tell you what was going on," he laughed again.
Remchard was about to add something when suddenly the locker room door swung open and Tompkins stalked in. The E.T. agent was still beaming.
"Thought I'd find you here, Hill," he began. "Still trying to investigate those conspiracy theories of yours, eh?"
He chuckled and winked at Remchard.
"Not really," Hill replied. "It was a harebrained theory. Obviously, it was the fumble that did it."
"Of course," Tompkins said. "Glad to hear it. Anyway, I've got good news for you."
"Oh, what's that? That the world is saved? Fine, but I'm still out of a job come tonight."
"Not at all," Tompkins replied. "That's what my call was about. We've got a job for you. We want you to join E.T. Relations."
Hill looked dubious.
"Come now," he said. "Me, an E.T. agent? I don't know the first thing about it. I'm a small-time local bureaucrat and sports official. How am I supposed to fit into E.T. Relations?"
"As a sports director," Tompkins replied. "Ever since this Brish deary thing broke, we've been getting dozens of requests from other alien trade missions and diplomatic stations on Earth. They all want to crack at it, too. So, to promote goodwill and all that, we're going to set up a program, and we want you to run it, at double your present salary, of course."
Hill thought about the difficulties of running a sports program for 24 wildly different types of extraterrestrials. Then he thought about the money he'd get for doing it. Then he thought about the Starport City Council.
Sounds like a fine idea, he said. But tell me, that gravity grid you were going to give to Starport, is that transferable too?
Of course, Tompkins said.
Then I accept, he glanced over at Remchard. Although I may live to regret it when I see what the Brish Deary can do on a basketball court.